Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Cares About the Rock Hall, a podcast about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm your host, Joe Quazala. I know entirely too much about the institution of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But folks, that's the premise of the show. That's why you've tuned in. If you didn't know that, now you do. With me, as always, is my co-host, the skeptic, the voice of the people, the little devil upon my shoulder, Kristen Studdard. Hey, Kristen.
Hello, Joe.
Oh, Kristen. Is it coursing through your veins? It's ballot season. It's nominee season.
It's really happening. It's wrapping up, though. I mean, I feel like soon enough it will be over and then it'll be, you know, the long wait.
Yes, I was going to say, is it the fallow period? Would that make sense?
Fallow period, yeah.
The long fallow period.
Yeah. We've been, the Patreon's going strong. We've been talking to voters about their ballots. Exclusive conversations over there on patreon.com/rockhallpod. Normally, around this time of year, we would talk to our guest on today's episode with a special ballot episode, but he's going to join us for that and more. And so let's bring him on here. One of our favorites.
But wait, there's more. If you believe call it? Right now, you'll also get this bonus episode.
Rush delivery available here. We've got from Slate's Hit Parade podcast, Chris Malanfi. Hey, Chris.
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
Good. It's always good to see you. Good to talk to you. Last time we both saw you was at the ceremony in New York in 2023. You came out here for PopCon. We've been crossing paths. It's
I've been around. Yeah, Joe and I saw each other for a hot second when I was in LA, but I got to see both of you guys when you were in Brooklyn, and that was a fun night. And weirdly, that was my first time attending a Rock Hall induction ceremony.
That is weird.
Yeah, I mean, they finally brought it back to my backyard and I didn't have a schedule conflict. I couldn't come up with an excuse not to go. I was like, you know what? I should do this. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good one.
Yeah, well, it was good.
It was a good show. Yeah.
A lot to like. But hey, that's in the freaking past. Our
rear
listeners.
View.
No, Chris, you're a voter. We talk to you about your ballot every year. And, you know, this is going to be.
And usually we are like pretty eye to eye, pretty simpatico. I'm hearing some rumblings that there might be some surprises on your ballot this year. I'm very curious.
You're an ally. I think we can.
Exactly.
You're an ally.
I like to think of myself as an ally.
a friend of our sensibilities. Normally this would be, this year, all these conversations are going directly to Patreon, but we're giving people a taste of what they're potentially missing or what they're already in on. But this is the kind of conversation we like to have. We like to talk about the ballot and go through the choices of actual Rock Hall voters. And so why don't we start?
To be clear, and this is material, this will not be a Patreon episode, what we're about to discuss.
Correct. This is main feed. This is a classic artist episode, but we are giving the main feed listeners a taste.
This is bonus content.
Good to know. I think I'm honored. I hope, you know, being used as a taster is, you know, an honor in the Who Cares About the Rock Hall cosmos.
Yeah, totally.
Totally.
So we'll begin with the first question is always, who shoots to the top of your list upon first glance at this ballot? Which artist do you see and you go, well, I have to vote for them, and I there's really not going to be any arguing me out of it.
Okay, well, I'm glad you asked me it. Yeah, sorry. I'm glad you asked me that question, because I did something this year that I've never done before. I wanted to do this as a thought exercise. Mm-hmm. I did a photocopy of my ballot, and which already makes me a nerd. And I marked it up the way one would mark up an Oscar Best Picture ballot. For those of you who are familiar with how the Academy Awards work, the Best Picture ballot is a ranked choice ballot where, you know, they give you 10 nominees and you, the Academy Awards voter, are supposed to rank them. And this affects, you know, consensus and so on and so forth. I did this because I wanted to figure out, like, in
kind order. Kind of the way all voting should be it's a more democratic way of voting. Mm-hmm. And I would love, and especially on a ballot where there's so many choices. We've talked about this in the past as well. I think ranked choice is a great idea.
Yeah, and it leads to consensus, which sometimes leads to middle of the road things winning. But, you know, I'd be curious to see it would be a great exercise for the Rock Hall to try a ranked choice ballot and see what would happen and see if some of these middle tier acts would somehow float to the top or what. Anyway, when I think
maybe they used to do that. I don't know that for sure, but and whenever you try to talk somebody who's been a voter since like the 80s, they can never remember. But I feel like once or twice someone has been like, I think it used to be ranked anyway.
I was on cocaine then. I can't possibly remember what I did in the 80s, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, rock and roll joke here. So, okay. Number one on my ballot. And I also one other thing I wanted to know, what are my five if I had only had five this year? Now that I have two extra, like who do I consider the two sort of bonus picks this year? Number one on my ballot, and Joe, this will warm your heart, was Kool & the Gang. Just because you don't have to make the case with me. They are funk legends. You know, did they invent funk the way, say, either James Brown or George Clinton defined funk? No, but they are among the most important early innovators of the genre and, you know, sources of so many samples. I happen to like when they went pop. I know people are sick of Celebration, but, you know, achieving a song that is that ubiquitous is a challenge. And there was some statistic in the 80s that I think Kool & the Gang had like one top 10 hit a year for something like 7 or 8 years in a row, including some top 10 hits that have gotten forgotten, like Misled and Victory. And, you know, so they were real hit makers. And even if you take the hits out of it, you know, their 70s output, which also generated hits, is vital. So, yeah.
And I know you're a Casey Kasem guy, and I couldn't find the direct quote, but I must have been some sort of 80s wrap-up special or whatever. But he said Kool & the Gang are the top band of the 80s. And I'm not I'm not sure what metric he was using. And I know you have access to an archive. Maybe you could find it if you were so curious.
I'm now going to go hunt for that because that fascinates me.
Oh, if he was so curious.
I say that.
Me? Who? Me?
I'm trying to be diplomatic here, but that's what, apparently what he had said. You know, maybe it's some calculation about album sales and top 10 hits and number ones, and I'm not sure what the certifications, but he said, and it wasn't just R&B, it wasn't just funk, it was bands. Period.
Wow. I find that a little hard to believe, but the metrics they used on AT40, they sometimes came up with their own metrics above and beyond Billboard, and who knows? That would be fascinating.
AT40. I love that. Great abbreviation.
Yeah, that's how we talk in the chart nerd circles. Kool & the Gang, total no-brainer. And they're number one on my ballot because they're first-timers on the ballot this year, and it's just kind of like, I always wanted to vote for these guys, so I'm not passing up the opportunity to vote for them. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Do you want to then go to the bottom of your list? Do you want to do it like that?
Ooh. Oh,
that's interesting.
And we'll make our way to the hard choices in the middle.
Okay, that's interesting, because then we're talking about the people I probably would never vote for.
And we don't have to, out of, politeness, we don't need to go that into it. Or if you can opt to you can plead the fifth here if you don't want to.
All right. Here's what's interesting is after I put down, I think, 1, 2, and 3, I immediately went and I said, I wonder who I would put at the bottom. And the one that was easiest to put at the bottom was the Dave Matthews Band, because I just have never cottoned on to their music. I'm sure Dave's a nice guy.
And I will say, at the ceremony, we were not sitting together at the ceremony, but I did run into you going to the bathroom during Dave Matthews.
Yes. Which I actually missed a chunk of a good speech.
I will say the speech, his was one of the best speeches of the night. It was one of the things that softened me on Dave. Now, I'm notoriously the softest on Dave in our circles, but I was impressed by his willingness to, be political and, speak. Yeah. Some truth on that night. So I enjoyed his speech. It doesn't mean I'm like, how could you put him at number 15? He'd probably be down there for me as well. But he did a good job.
Yeah. I do wonder whether Greta Gerwig putting his music in Lady Bird improved anybody's opinion of Dave Matthews, because she was very unabashed about, given her age and her generation, genuinely loving Dave's 90s output. And I can't gainsay that. So, but but it's an easy call for me to put him at the bottom of the list. Do you want to give you a few more bottom dwellers?
Sure. Yeah. I was like, do we go back to number two and then do it like that?
Okay. Let me go back to number two. I would say number two, I voted for them before. I'm voting for them again. A Tribe Called Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Among the rap picks, it's kind of a no-brainer. I continue to wish that De La Soul would be tried on this ballot sometime, but I suppose let's get Tribe in. And maybe this year, given the hip-hop choices, they actually stand a chance of getting in when you combine that with the seven votes thing. They are just about my favorite rap troupe. I mean, they released one semi-weak album, The Love Movement, but they never released a bad album. Those first three albums are all-timers. And yeah, just no-brainer for me. And one other thing, I was a little ashamed. One of the times they were on the ballot, I did not vote for them because there were other priorities that year. I think it may have even been last year with Missy.
It was
my first priority
year.
Was getting Missy in. Yeah, and it hurt. It really hurt not to vote for them, but I had to make some tough choices last year. So they would be my number two. Moving back to the bottom, I think I put Ozzy Osbourne at 14th, not because I don't respect the output, but I don't find the case for a double nomination for Ozzy that compelling. I find there are very few double nominees that I find truly compelling. The one you keep citing that I agree with is Peter Gabriel, because I feel like his solo work is so distinct from Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I grant that folks who know more about metal than I do think of Ozzy's solo work as very distinct from Sabbath, and I buy that, but does it merit, is this a Tina Turner situation, you know, where like there's injustice by him not being in as a soloist, and I'm not sure that it rises to that level.
It can play on some sympathies given, you know, his physical health and the fact that he could probably do one last show. But beyond that, it's a double induction, which, you know, if you're sticking to your principles.
Right. I'm not ipso facto against all double inductions. It's just there's got to be a darn good reason.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I have a darn good reason for Ozzy. And moreover, he clearly does not need my vote this year. I think he's one of the slam dunks on the ballot.
You'll be all right.
Agree.
Okay. Who did I put third? Third is somebody that I keep saying over and over again, I want to vote for, and I think I've only maybe voted for her once before, and that's Mary J. Blige.
All right.
Yeah. Queen of hip hop soul, an innovator, a phenomenal vocalist, somebody who's, you know, gone across rap, even rock, done a little of everything. The albums are good. She's an album artist. And that's another one, a little like Missing Tribe last year, where it was kind of like she was been on the ballot before, and I keep saying, oh yeah, I got to vote for Mary, and then I keep not doing it. And so this year I took one look at the ballot and I'm like, yeah, I've got it. This has got to be the year. So she's getting my vote.
Nice.
Worthy.
Shall I move back to the bottom?
Yeah, why not? I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, me too.
All right, fair enough. 13th, I'm putting Peter Frampton. you guys have said it on previous episodes. Nice guy, a great technician, not quite a full-blown Hall of Fame career. I won't be mad when and if he gets in. But, you know, and in general, one theme you'll see in my bottom dwellers is, I've said this before when I've been on this with you guys, generally, I give myself an allowance of no more than one group or act that is white dude with a guitar or a group of white dudes with guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I don't think any of my top seven fall into that category. I take it as my mission as a middle-aged white dude myself to vote for stuff other than that, because I feel like in general, it doesn't need my vote.
You heard it here first. Chris Malamphy has the woke mind virus.
But also now more than ever, it's easy to not vote for white guys with guitars. There's less on the ballot this year.
And they're not the kind of top tier white guys with guitars are in already.
Right. So let's see. Who did I put fourth? Fourth for me is Sinead O'Connor. For
I was wondering when she was going to come up in your order.
Yeah. If anything, if I could probably say I'm closer to her material than I am to Mary J. Blige's, for example, but it's, you know, the legendary period is shorter, but it's got such a major impact. And, you know, you guys have already picked apart the would she want this question. And I'm of the opinion that we're past that point. You know, if she's on the ballot and she's worthy, You should vote for her regardless of whether she would want this. And in a world where the Sex Pistols are already in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't see why we can't have Sinead O'Connor in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the gatekeeping of like the should question comes from a real place, and it comes from a good place. It comes from the heart, I think. But also, that's not really what it's about. You know, if this is to be like canonization of worthy artists, then you know, you can think about that, but that's not really what the mission is here.
Exactly. All right, so back to the bottom dwellers. I think I'm spoiling the thing we're talking about today by saying this, but 12th on my list is Lenny Kravitz.
I mean, that feels about right.
You know, like, do I, and as we'll discuss when we get to the Lenny Kravitz conversation, do I have some measure of respect for him? Yes, I devoted a Hit Parade episode, half, to him. And actually doing that Hit Parade episode made me think a little more highly of his catalog. I'm just not sure it's quite a Hall of Fame career, and we can discuss why later.
Yeah, that's good. I don't think you need to say too much because we will get into it, but we'll definitively say it's number 12 of 15. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I guess my fifth vote, if I were still only getting five votes, would be Sade. There's just nobody else like them. If you consider Sophistopop to be a genre, which I kind of do. I mean, to me, they're the signal artist of Sophistopop. They even kind of helped define what Quiet Storm became in the 80s. Quiet Storm was not invented by them, but, you know, she actually sings those words in one of their biggest hits. And I think I read a statistic that, you know, like radio stations that were switching to the smooth jazz format in the late 80s and looking for artists that they could play besides Kenny G and Dave Grusin and stuff like that, that could bring in an audience that liked pop music, they all played Sade. I'm not sure that's a good thing, but it does give them a multi-genre crossover that, you know, makes them sort of impossible to pigeonhole, which I like.
Yeah, smooth jazz radio airplay isn't always a metric we use for determining these things, but yeah, it is an interesting, and it makes sense. They're like the coolest possible version of that.
Yeah. And I mean, the band, and they are a band, as everybody's been pointing out, they rock in their own way. They, you know, may do it with a quieter pulse, but you know, some of those albums are fantastic. I mean, probably the one I've played the most is Love Deluxe, the early 90s one, which is just one banger after another. So that's Sade.
And that would be your old school five artist ballot.
Mm-hmm. That would be my old school five.
Okay.
Back to the bottom. We're in the mushy middle. 11th, I put Oasis. I did a Britpop episode of Hit Parade. Do I have a sort of grudging respect for Oasis? Yes. Do I like a couple of their albums? Yes. Do they need my vote? Not really. Will I be heartbroken if they don't get in? Not at all. I'm morbidly curious about whether they would show up and what they will do, but not enough to throw a vote their way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Yeah, agree. All right.
So now we're into the two that I get as bonus picks.
These are your bubble picks, yeah.
All right. Sixth for me, this won't come as a surprise, is Eric B. and Rakim. They are the definition of an act I probably would not have voted for, a la not voting for Tribe last year because I voted for Missy, in the sense of, if we've got to get a hip-hop act in, the priority, you know, last year was Missy. The priority this year for me is Tribe. But, you know, what more can you say about Rakim? He's a lyrical technician. He is, you know, one of the best who's ever rocked the mic. And I can't remember who was on one of your episodes said, maybe Charles Hughes said, you go back and listen to the material and they never recorded a bad album. I mean, it's not a huge catalog, but it's like a, you know, catalog full of bangers. So
spotless.
So they get my sixth vote, and I'm happy to have that sixth vote. What am I up to? 10th, I guess.
Yeah,
tenth,
let's maybe do 10, 9, 8, and then we can reveal that final slot on the ballot in the most suspenseful way possible.
Well, 10th, I'm ranking Jane's Addiction. I've never been terribly close to their material. I like what I like. I own both Nothing Shocking and Ritual. I've played them quite a bit. Their influence on what alternative rock became is defensible. but I guess I've always found them a little overrated. There was a period in the mid-90s where Spin magazine would put Perry Farrell on their cover for coughing. I mean, like, it's he was kind of their go-to default.
He's their Jim Morrison. It's like Rolling Stone likes to put Jim Morrison on the cover at any given opportunity. He was their Jim Morrison.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. And I just, there's such huge gaps in the output. I didn't think Porno for Pyros were all that interesting, not that we're voting for them. So yeah, I guess I'm betraying my Gen X.
Just gonna say
loyalties, but
Gen X person, aren't you? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
This is why MC5 never got in. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good analogy, actually. You really want me to count down?
I think that's the only way to do it.
Okay. Well, then, ninth on my ballot is Mariah Carey.
I knew it.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to, you know, here's a little tease for the Patreon. We're starting to see some interesting thoughts and choices around Mariah.
Yeah. Now, do you want me to get into it on Mariah right now, or do you want me to reveal the rest of my ballot?
Let's hear. I would love to hear.
We might as well.
Okay. Because there's only two slots left, I'll just tell you that my seventh and final vote is Cher. Mm-hmm. And to me, Cher is not somebody I would have thrown a vote to if I didn't have seven votes. But like, do I think she deserves to be in? Yes, I do. And then that leaves as my eighth vote Foreigner. And I can talk about Foreigner later. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm revealing that is this makes my ballot Mary J., Cher, Sinead, in no particular order, Sade, Tribe, Eric B. and Rakim, and Kool and the Gang. Mm-hmm. I'll admit, when I got this ballot, and I saw Mariah was on there, I had a bit of a visceral reaction, and you're probably getting some of this visceral reaction from some of the people you're talking to.
Feeling it.
Yeah, and kind of surprisingly, but it's interesting.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, there's a way I can vote on this ballot where I can vote around Mariah without having to vote for Mariah. And that's more or less what I've decided to do. You would think that a guy who writes about and podcasts about what I podcast about would be like...
Exactly, hits.
Yes.
Who's got him?
I will tell you that cuts both ways, because someday it may still happen. She's now deep into her 50s. I don't think we actually know how old Mariah is because she lied about her age at one point.
Timeless.
But she's timeless.
She has no
age. And she very nearly do it. She has 19 number one hits on the Hot 100. If she gets a 20th, she will tie the Beatles. Now, far be it for me to defend the honor of some straight white men with guitars, but I do not love all of that material. I can name the 5 to 10 Mariah songs that I would put in a time capsule, and they exist and they're pretty damn great. But there's a lot of schlock in that list of 19 number one hits. I very nearly thought she was going to pull it off a couple years ago when she guested on Lotto's Big Energy. Mm-hmm. They credited her for that. And I thought, this is how she's going to get the 20th number one hit. And it didn't happen. Big Energy, I think, peaked at number 3. And I thought, man, that's going to be the most anticlimactic possible way for Mariah to score a 20th number one hit.
A remix.
I mean, the thing about Mariah for me, I went through my own, I won't even call it raucous phase because I've been following the Billboard chart since I was a teenager, but I mean, a phase where she really gave me a Swift pain. Even then, there were songs of hers that I loved. I actually really liked Vision of Love. There's a hit of hers that's forgotten now that peaked at number 2. It actually broke her initial streak of number one hits called Can't Let Go. That is one of my favorites of her hits. That's a great hit.
That ends with a major whistle tone.
I like the way she sings it because it's actually quite restrained for most of the way through. I love Always Be My Baby. I love, obviously, All I Want for Christmas Is You. But the thing about Mariah is that, and I think this may be what you're picking up with some of the people you're talking to, myself included, not voting for her does not feel to me like punching down. It feels like punching up, because Mariah has been a fairly, if you were around in the early 90s as following the music industry as closely as I did, Mariah did not feel like a scrappy underdog. She felt like the D-Day, planning, hitting the beaches of Normandy. It was like the most coordinated battle plan. And I think I have more affection for Mariah when she feels
became
like a
butterfly and freed. I think that Mariah Carey is just like, First of all, I mean, to say that, like, you know, it feels like punching up or whatever. I mean, you know, the nice way to think about it is like Mariah doesn't need the hall. But I think that what we're really running into is just like, I mean,
the sigh that Chris,
the deep sigh.
I cannot believe how often I've had to make this case, how much it is like so deeply disappointing how dismissive people are of her and her career and her talent and her worthiness. I'm just constantly surprised to the point that I like feel a bit beaten down by it. We're rounding out our voter calls now, and it's just, it has been a slog of anti-Mariah sentiment at worst, and just like tepid at best. Like, I'm so surprised.
And like, if there were to be any Mariah voters, we would expect them to be the people that we're talking to, because we understand our sample to some degree. You know, we aren't getting a lot of classic rock love with our writer, critic, type voters, which we expect and we know to calibrate accordingly when we think about the larger voting body and the fact that Bon Jovi and the Red Hot Chili Peppers are also voting in this thing, and who they tend to go for, and that Frampton and Foreigner and Ozzy really appeal to them, but Mariah does not. But and then so the question starts to become, who is Mariah appealing to? And I think there's a path for her, but it's not as rock solid as we initially assumed.
When Whitney Houston first appeared on the ballot a few years ago, first of all, I voted for her right away, and that was long overdue. And second of all, she got in right away. And I do think there's a difference in voters' minds. I know there's a difference in my mind mm-hmm. between what Whitney achieved and what Mariah achieved. And the case for Whitney was sort of unimpeachable. And the case for Mariah is weirdly, I think, wobblier for people. I also would compare her, this is going to sound like a weird analogy, I would compare Mariah to somebody like Radiohead or the White Stripes, in that it may take two or three tries and it will shock everybody how many tries it takes, but she probably will get in. Frankly, if she doesn't get in one or two times, I may throw a vote her way. Mm-hmm. I did put her ninth. I didn't put her 15th.
Right.
But
I mean, the comparison might be Janet.
Or Janet. Know?
Someone like
right.
Janet.
And I mean, that pissed me off. I really thought Janet deserved it, and I voted for her each and every time she was on the ballot. So just so you know where I'm coming from, it's not as if I would not.
Yeah, it's not part of the question. Yeah.
Right. Mariah's profile. But I will say that I took one look at this ballot the day it came out, and I said, oh, I can vote for this combination of people and not vote for Mariah and do it with a clear conscience, because nobody can accuse me of sexism, racism, rockism, any ism.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the way my loyalties lie. I should add also, I did an episode about Mariah. I did an episode of Hit Parade that was about All I Want for Christmas Is You. And when that happened on the charts, I found it really delightful. It was a great chart story. I like All I Want for Christmas Is You. But what then happened with All I Want for Christmas Is You, speaking as a chart person, is what happens with Mariah in these various stretches where she goes on a rampage in the 90s, in the mid-aughts, after she had the Emancipation of Mimi come back. And then suddenly everything she was putting out was going to number one as a matter of course, including lesser singles like Touch My Body. That Christmas record has now gone back to number one, a total of, I think, 12 or 13 cumulative weeks over 4 years. So like the joy one felt in 2019 when Christmas, All I Want for Christmas Is You finally went to number one, quickly turned to, oh God, are we just going to listen to this record every Christmas for the rest of time? That's, to me, the Mariah story. And that's why it makes it very hard for me in my heart of hearts to check the box. So I just want you to know where I'm coming from on that.
It's so disappointing. It's so sad to me. Yeah. I really thought when she finally got the nomination that she was just going to get in, but it is, I'm really feeling I'm at the point where I can't even like make the case again. Although I guess these listeners haven't been hearing all of our voter episodes.
But if you want to hear those conversations, of course you can go to patreon.com/rockhallpod. You will hear in depth what we are.
I'm a Patreon member. I'm a proud member. member of the Patreon.
Yes. Also, man, well, and also, and I know that we'll get through, once we get to your final, then I do want to discuss our most recent Patreon conversation that we had and kind of, you know, do a little, a compare contrast, because we finally did talk to what we would consider a real hall voter. And I don't know when that conversation is going to come out, but it was eye-opening.
Certainly.
It was what we always knew, but it was like to see it happen, we were like, whoa, okay. That's how it really is.
But oh my gosh. You know, we've found out your ballot. This is an artist episode though, so it's time to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll get into the real meat of the episode, which is evaluating Mr. Lenny Kravitz. So we will be right back. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We hope you had a nice break. We hope over your break you talked about a weird conversation with a nice person. You recalled a strange crossing of paths.
Fascinating interaction.
Yes. All right. So we enough ballot talk. Let's talk about number 12 in your heart, Chris.
On this list, he's number 12.
Yeah.
Well, coincidentally, I think that's where Fly Away peaked on the Hot 100, by the way. I think number 12. Yeah, anyway.
But Lenny Kravitz, and I want to, I guess, what would we do first? We could talk about his kind of biography leading up to his recording career, or we could just get a little insight from you as to why you chose Lenny Kravitz as a subject for a dedicated Hit Parade episode, because I listened to it, and it's very interesting.
Thank you. Actually, you know, funny story, Joe texted me some months back complimenting me on this episode of Hit Parade. And I said, thanks. I'm glad you liked it because it's probably one of the episodes I've gotten some of the worst feedback on. Like, I even got one guy who's like, oh, I could tell when you did an episode about Lenny Kravitz and Bruno Mars that you would like run out of ideas. That's a quote. Yeah, I don't get too much hate mail, but sometimes I get my share of hate mail. And that was an eye opener. So to clarify, last July, I did an episode. This was an idea that had been knocking around my head for years, comparing the careers of Lenny Kravitz and Bruno Mars. And that may seem a little far-fetched, but it occurred to me at some point, I think even before I had Hit Parade, which has now been on for like 7 years, that they are doing some version of the same career, those two guys, in that their whole MO is emulating their heroes and kind of taking material and sounds and styles made famous by earlier, you know, rock and pop and R&B legends and sort of reupholstering them for the current day. And they have gotten remarkably far, both of them. By the way, I also turned up when I put the episode together that they've appeared live at each other's concerts multiple times. When I found that, I was like, oh, eureka. Like, these guys admire each other. Perfect. And it makes total sense. If Lenny Kravitz was going to admire anybody from the current generation, it would be Bruno Mars. And if Bruno Mars was going to like an older rock star, it would be Lenny Kravitz. They have so much in common. They come from showbiz families. They, you know, again, emulate their heroes. They are multiracial, so they're kind of hard to pin down to any one genre. They've tried a little bit of everything. I had fun putting the episode together, and Joe's was not the only good feedback I've gotten on it. I got a few compliments on it, but it's definitely one of the stranger Hit Parade episodes I've put out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting comparison, and I think that's what makes it great. Is it wasn't like part of the conversation. You weren't responding to some other connection someone else had made. It was an original thought, and you had the stuff to back it up. And yeah, a fun experiment comparison and career evaluation. And I encourage all our listeners to seek it out because it's a fun listen and an enlightening one.
Thank you.
Maybe a good companion to this one. Let's talk about Lenny's kind of early life leading up to the career, the music career. Like you said, showbiz family. He was born in New York in 1964. His dad was a TV producer, and his mom, Roxy Roker, an actress who people would know from The Jeffersons. Right. And that it was that job that got them to Los Angeles.
Exactly.
And, you know, he grew up, he had grown up kind of around jazz in New York. His father was a jazz promoter. And there's stories of Duke Ellington singing him happy birthday when he turned five. Like that,
in the
that
Rainbow kind of Room, of all places. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a way in which Lenny Kravitz is kind of the ultimate Nepo baby. And then to give him his props, there's a way in which he's not, because he actually kind of took some square root of what his mom and his dad did and did something completely, not completely different, but sort of adjacent to it. You know, Roxy Roker made her name on television and as an actress. And, you know, she was on The Jeffersons and was sort of the main supporting player on that. She wasn't the lead, but she was, you know, a regular on the show and much beloved on that show. One of the things I turned up when I put together the episode was an interview she did on, I think, Merv Griffin in something like 1983 or 84, where Merv is saying, and I understand your son is trying to make it big in the music business. She's like, oh, yes. And she was snarking and almost dunking on him, like he's all new wave now, and, you know, like poking fun at how her son was doing his own thing, which I found very charming. But yeah, I mean, he definitely leveraged his connections, but in a direction you wouldn't necessarily expect. It's not like he then became a TV actor or a jazz performer.
But he still managed to make use of those parental connections, because I believe it was his dad who paid for his studio time, and his mom knew a music supervisor from The Jeffersons, a guy named Stephen Elvis Smith, who then became his manager and helped him get a record deal with Virgin Records.
Yep.
And
through the mid to late 80s, there are multiple attempts and multiple permutations of what Lenny does. And I think what makes Lenny Kravitz interesting is his, and I'll even say a little bit advanced in his way, is he is genreless before that becomes a thing. Now we talk in the modern day, you know, among Zoomer artists that, you know, genre has almost become quaint to Gen Z artists. And Lenny was kind of a version of that back in the 80s. He was trying to be new wave. He was trying to be pop. He was trying to be Prince to a certain extent. He also at one point changed his name to Romeo Blue. That was his stage name.
All right.
Yeah, you got to love that. And to be fair, and I've read, you know, I sort of dipped in and out of his memoir when I was putting the episode together. I don't think I read it cover to cover, but I probably read about 2/3 to 3/4 of it. And I've read several interviews with him, and he admitted Lenny Kravitz, not the most rock and roll name, right? You know, like he thought he needed either a mononym or a pseudonym or something other than his actual name. And reportedly, I think this is in his memoir, it was Lisa Bonet, when he connected with her around 87, 88, just as her star was rising on The Cosby Show, she convinced him, why don't you just perform as Lenny Kravitz? And he took that advice.
I have also seen it attributed to this this manager. This Stephen Elvis Smith said something along those lines. And it's also very likely there were a few forces in his life that were going, sure, like, I don't know about Romeo Blue.
You don't need, right, to do all that. But you know what? If Romeo Blue had broken through, we'd be like, and did you know his name used to be Lenny Kravitz?
Exactly.
Yikes. That would never have worked. Like, it's just what works. It's not whether or not
I agree,
history belongs to the victors. Kravitz is the winner, apparently, versus Romeo Blue.
Yeah, whatever you're used to just sounds right. And then you can reverse engineer all sorts of laughter about the other names. But yeah, Lenny is the one that won out. Right. Let's give some hall context for Lenny Kravitz. Became eligible for the Rock Hall as of 2015 because his debut album, Let Love Rule, is from 1989. He has never been on a ballot before. He has shown up, though, at ceremonies. He did the Prince tribute at the 2017 ceremony and gave the speech to induct his friend Lionel Richie in 2022. I also found pictures of him at the 2004 ceremony, and his hair looks like a female news anchor from 1990. anyone. It is in such a way that I really should have pulled up a picture for you guys.
Yeah, I'm gonna find one.
If you do, I think if you do 2004 and you probably search like Waldorf Astoria Lenny Kravitz, you will see. I mean, this guy has gone through a lot of looks, and I would say this one, 2004 Waldorf Astoria Lenny Kravitz will get you there. And I do think I'm about right. It almost
should I pull it up?
Yeah,
here, I'll just share my screen. He's got news anchor hair. It's very
Yeah.
I don't remember this look for Lenny.
Me neither.
I remember giant afro. I remember dreads. You know, I remember maybe three or four Lenny looks, but I do not remember this look. Wow, that is something.
Yeah, it looks like he's doing a guest spot on Designing Women.
It's great. He should have kept it.
At any rate,
about being a sex symbol.
At any rate, you know, he's the kind of guy who was invited to Rock Hall ceremonies, and you know, recently has been participating in them, and so to see him on the ballot now, you know, to some degree was a surprise, but it really shouldn't have been. He's the type of industry darling that is going to be considered eventually. I didn't think it was going to happen this soon, but we're coming up on 10 years of eligibility. So, I mean, I guess here we are. So let's dive into the categories then. You know what these are, Chris. These are to evaluate an artist's potential as an inductee if they have a strong case, if the hall will find them to be worthy. And it starts off with iconic / majorly recognizable songs. And what we've been doing this year, I think it's a nice way to tell the story, is to go chronologically.
Right.
Not from the top down in terms of recognizability, but in order to tell the story of Lenny Kravitz's career, we'll start from the beginning. And like I said, there's that first album in 1989, Let Love Rule, which didn't make much of a mark, went to number 61. Only one of the singles charted, and that was the title track, which went all the way to number 89, Let Love Rule.
But that is the song I know.
Is like, it? I don't know this one at all.
I've heard it before. I've just heard it. It's not like, maybe it had a music video or something. That might be why I would be familiar with it. But I knew that song.
Details. That music video, the one they shot more than one music video, but I think the one that eventually wound up on MTV was directed by Lisa Bonet you know, co-directed, something like that. So it's got a very groovy look. You have to also place it in this 1989 context, speaking as someone who remembers this from that high school college period where I was at the time. We're still at the tail end of boomer 80s nostalgia. And by the way, being born in 1964 makes Lenny Kravitz a very technical baby boomer. He's kind of at the cusp of Gen X. He's like a year older than Gen X.
What's the sandwich? What's the shoulder generation for that? Because it's like there's elder millennials or like genials. And then there's like at the bottom of that, it's like the zennials with the Z.
This would make Gen Lenny Z. Gen W.
Gen W.
Sure. We'll call him Gen W.
That would be it when he's Gen W. That's great.
In any event, so both Lisa and Lenny were trafficking in sort of unrestrained 60s nostalgia. They kind of wanted to look like they just fell out of either a Beatles or a Jimi Hendrix music video from 1968. That was their look. That was their vibe. In fact, one of the things I uncovered for my episode is that you can do a pretty easy mashup of Let Love Rule and the Beatles' Hey Jude. The reason I know this, I knew to look for it, was that I vividly remember being at a concert around 1989, 90, a club date near a college. And as part of the warm-up music, they were playing Let Love Rule. And to snark on the song, some folks at the concert I was attending were singing na, 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 along to the melody of Let Love Rule. The mashup is pretty damn obvious. So that's kind of the vibe. I will say also that Let Love Rule, the album, it may not have charted very high, but it was a sleeper. It went gold maybe a year or two after it first charted. It sort of sold quietly and steadily without ever charting spectacularly. And one other chart detail I uncovered was that at the end of 89, 90, Lenny was simultaneously charting on both the modern rock chart, so that's kind of like the alternative radio chart, and the mainstream or album rock chart. So basically, he was getting played alongside the likes of Eric Clapton and alongside the likes of REM and the B-52s. He kind of worked in both contexts. And this, again, is a theme that I'll come back to. He's an interesting liminal figure. He's hard to pin down, and that's what makes him interesting.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about
a little too generic. I think that that's like kind of the
that too
that's the flip side of that.
No country to live in. Yeah. We mentioned Lisa Bonet, and there's an interesting little detour that happens after this album. Lenny's married to Lisa Bonet at this point, but he's having an affair with a singer named Ingrid Chavez, and he wrote a song that was like a love letter. So she wrote a song that was like a love letter to him.
A set of lyrics that were initially a poem. Yes.
Right. And they recorded as kind of a demo. And Lenny didn't feel like it was really his style. It didn't feel like it could be for him. So he gave it to Madonna. And so he's giving this song to Madonna. He has Ingrid sign something, agreeing to only 12.5% publishing and no songwriting credit, which would then go to Madonna and Lenny instead. And as you can imagine, that led to subsequent lawsuits and settlements, because the song went
to
number...
Have we said the name of the song? The name of the song is Justify My Love.
Justify My Love, which was a number one song.
Needing, waiting for you to justify my love.
Probably Madonna's strangest, most left field number one song. I don't think.
Yeah, because it's like a very, you know, like breathy, ethereal.
Not really hooky, especially compared to other Madonna singles. And this is one that has like a talk about music video. This had like a black and white.
That was a black and white kind of like sexual video. I remember that.
That was banned by MTV.
Controversial. Yeah. Right. Okay. I'm like, I couldn't remember what it was banned. Yeah.
It was the subject of much debate in late 1990, early 91, and Madonna, being the marketing genius she is, decided to release it as a video single on VHS. And those video singles counted for the charts. So a big reason why Justify My Love went to number one and sold well and went either gold or platinum was that it sold incredibly well as a video single. It was, by the way, a bonus track on Madonna's Greatest Hits album from 1990, The Immaculate Collection, which has sold... you know, has gone diamond. Yeah. It sold more than 10 million copies. So even if Ingrid Chavez had only a small piece of that song, it probably set her up for life, even though it was kind of insulting that she didn't get formal songwriting credit on it. Mm-hmm. And the last detail is that this is the thing that's most un-Lenny Kravitz-like about Justify My Love. Lenny built it out of those lyrics penned by Ingrid Chavez, and the beat was taken from a Public Enemy track.
Security of the First World.
So Lenny Kravitz built Justify My Love out of a Public Enemy beat. There is literally nothing else in Lenny Kravitz's recording history like this song in style, in approach. He basically, you know, played Bomb Squad or Dr. Dre for a day and put together this hip hop adjacent Madonna song, which, by the way, was one other reason why I wanted to do a Hit Parade episode on this guy, because one other way he's a little like Bruno Mars is that Bruno Mars wrote songs for other people. And Lenny, his biggest chart hit as a songwriter and producer is actually Justify My Love. It's his only number one hit as a songwriter and producer.
A very strange detour in this man's career, and it happened rather early too.
I mean, this could be its whole... I'm now down a bit of a rabbit hole and I need to step back into Lenny land, but I'm just like, and Ingrid Chavez with the love interest in Graffiti Bridge, the Prince film. It's like,
that's right.
What is even happening? Like,
yeah, we can't.
And Ingrid Chavez was trying to start a recording career after appearing in the Prince movie. It was a whole thing. And then the affair that Joe mentioned, Lenny,
that's also
the reason why he was trying to erase her from the songwriting was he didn't want Lisa Bonet to find out they were having an affair. It was a mess. It was a whole lot of conflama.
Yeah. But getting away from that strange one-off songwriting detour, we get to Lenny's second album, 1991's Mama Said, which does contain one of his biggest hits, possibly his best song, I would say, It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
Hit on the pop charts. And basically, the stylistic throwback that he's doing there is not really 60s. It's more like early 70s. It's basically like a stylistics homage. It's
Philly
like,
Soul, yeah.
It's Philly Soul from the early 70s in the form of a 1991 hit. And it's well sung, well produced. It's a beautiful record, and it's his biggest hit under his own name. It, you know, pushes the Mama Said album to gold, and I think possibly eventually platinum.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, it took maybe 7 months for it to go gold, peaked at number 39. There were a bunch of singles off that album, but none of them were hits, certainly not to the degree that that song was. And that's a song
if I can shout out. If I can shout out more song from that album, there's a song with a guest appearance by Slash, then at the absolute peak of Guns N' Roses, called Always on the Run. Was a pretty big rock radio hit. I think it charted both modern rock and mainstream rock, and it's a smoking record. I think I may like that even better than It Ain't Over Till It's Over, good as that record is.
Wow.
It's pretty badass. It sort of sounds like a Sly Stone circa Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again kind of fuzz rock kind of thing. And it also sounds like a first draft of a song I know we're going to talk about in a minute, Are You Gonna Go My Way. It sort of sounds like his first attempt at a record like that.
Which right. To me, Are You Gonna Go My Way, which I think is the next song we're going to talk about, I would have thought that that would have been his biggest hit, like top biggest chart top. That to me, that is Lenny Kravitz. That's, if you are just thinking about it, it's him. You think Lenny mm-hmm. Kravitz, you hear that song, you see him in his bell bottoms and no shirt and a belt, and he's playing guitar and he's got a big afro, and so does his drummer, and they're
this is Dread era Kravitz.
Are shaking around in the video, but
yeah,
yes,
this is dreadlock era.
Oh yeah, this is Dread. I'm sorry. Well,
great music video, by the way. The Mark Romanek music directed mm-hmm. music video is legitimately a fantastic video, just a beautiful piece of work.
And Are You Gonna Go My Way is also the name of the album from 1993. Didn't chart on the Hot 100.
I think I would need to double check this. It was not released as a single. This is in the period where for something to chart on the Hot 100, has to be released as a retail single. The statistic you need to know about Are You Gonna Go My Way was that it topped the album rock chart, now known as the mainstream rock chart. That is remarkable. That made Lenny Kravitz the first black person to top that chart in about, I think, 7 or 8 years. I think Robert Cray's Smoking Gun in 1986 was maybe the last song by a black performer to top that chart. And again, to really tell the Lenny Kravitz story, you kind of have to look at more than the Hot 100, because the way he kind of crossed over in all sorts of strange places, eventually he even starts charting adult contemporary. He kind of appears in multiple places. That's what makes him interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this is his most played song on Spotify, Kristen,
makes
to your
sense.
Point about the fact that this is the most emblematic. This is the one, probably his signature song.
And I honestly think this song rocks the most.
Me too.
This song rocks. It rocks the most. It's a great song. You're not going to hear me shit on Are You Going to Go My Way. You'll hear me, you know, gently.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take some shots at him in other areas, but like this song rocks, and it is kind of just like undeniably a hard rock and good time. You know, it is so like fast and guitar driven and fun, and he's having a good time. And it, I don't know, this song goes, it's good.
I mean, I would say it's the best Jimi Hendrix song that Hendrix never wrote.
Agree.
Right. And even at the time, I will tell you, in 1993, a lot of critics who were giving Lenny a lot of shit prior to this song were kind of giving it up to him, like, all right, game recognized game. Like, we know what you're doing. We know who you're, you know, emulating. But damn if you didn't write a fucking phenomenal song. That was kind of the vibe at the time, was that a lot of critics who were previously throwing shade at him were saying kinder things after that record.
Yeah, you can't be mad at this song. Like, you can be like, oh, it's derivative, but like all music is derivative. I don't know. This is just like, he did a great job at it, and I'm not angry.
There's some magic to it. The riff is an amazing riff.
Amazing riff.
And you know, when the critics are not kind to Lenny, his peers, but kind of the old guard of rockers have always loved Lenny. Around this time, you know, he writes a song for Aerosmith. He's on Mick Jagger's solo album. He plays guitar on a Bowie track. Like the founding fathers, like the real rock royalty have embraced Lenny.
That does not surprise me also in that he just, I've said this before, but like he is the like boomer ideal of what a rock star should be. And the fact that he existed in the 90s, people were like, oh my God, they're still rock and roll, man. Like it just feels that way. Like he's an avatar.
And even though he charted on the so-called modern rock, which was then basically the alternative rock chart, he wasn't that alternative. He was really playing it up the middle. Like some of his tracks charted well at alt rock radio, but basically he was kind of throwing fastballs right over the plate.
Mm-hmm. And this is another one where like there's kind of the one big song. You likely don't know any of the other songs from this album, but that doesn't stop the album from going platinum. Within a few months, peaks at number 12. And then again, like when we talk about the old guard, he plays with John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin at the VMAs. He plays with Stevie Wonder on a song for a Kiss cover album. And baby, if you're feeling nice, you know your man is working hard. Like it just really doesn't stop with like, hey, who's someone who's around who is a formative rock and roller? Like they are going to collaborate with Lenny in some way or another.
Right. And when you consider all those people he's worked with, you kind of understand how he winds up on a ballot like this. Like he has friends across the industry.
Yes. And a lot of them are voters. Oh,
yeah. And the fact that then he, you know, it's like he inducts Lionel Richie. It is all you see. It's not like you don't have to have a conspiracy board to just see the connections here. It's not.
It's out in the open. Yeah, it's plain to see. Now, the next album in 1995 is Circus, which goes to number 10. But mostly on anticipation, I would say
it was a classic Coattails album, but it debuted well and then didn't produce any major hits.
Mm-mm. No.
And that's interesting in the arc of Lenny's story is that if we were having this conversation in 1996, say, I would say, oh, yeah, he had a nice little run. Too bad it's over now. That's that the next twist in his story is what makes him a little interesting.
Yeah. So the next album after that is called Five, as it was his fifth studio album. Starts off with three dud singles,
right,
but is revived with a huge single, Fly Away. I want to get away. I wanna
fly away. Yeah, yeah. Which is buried on the second half of the album, a song that reportedly he had to convince his label to let him put on the album, and then had to convince them to promote it. And it was a massive hit. It not only brought him back to the top 40, just outside of the pop top 10, it went to number one on both the mainstream rock and modern rock charts. So like both alternative rock radio, whatever version that was by 1998, you know, this is the era of post-grunge, circa Third Eye Blind and Matchbox 20, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. Fly Away is getting
that
played on
both. That fits right in. Fly Away right in there. You put that on a... That is a three-song set on a radio station.
And my other favorite memory about Fly Away is it was on the first edition of the American version of Now That's What I Call Music, that CD series.
Oh, yes.
Alongside the likes of Hanson's Mbop and, you know, just lots of massive pop songs. So, like, Lenny was sort of this all-purpose rock/pop star at this point.
Yeah. And this is his second most streamed with 320 million. Not really considered to be one of his best, but you know, there's certain lyrics in there that.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, I wish that I could fly up in the sky like a dragonfly, like, you know, not the most inspired.
Cool. It's not profound. Three different ways. Did you see that? It's the same word, but he made it sound like three different words.
I will say, for all the shit that this song gets, I do think there is something undeniably catchy about it. I think it's a pretty good riff. It wins the Best Male Rock Vocal Grammy, his first of four consecutive.
Good God. See, this is why, you know, we talked about people not liking Mariah. I'm like, this is where you're going to get me on Lenny too, is that it's just like so much of this is he's just being boosted up by an industry, whereas I believe that Mariah Carey is much more talented and has way better songs than him. Neither here nor there.
I actually agree for the record.
We have numeric evidence. Yeah. 12 but, versus 9, I think.
Yes. But he is, it is interesting. It's like now he becomes this more like, he's like an icon of him, of himself, rather than it being about like necessarily that he's like an idea. Like people love the idea. Lenny Kravitz, yes. A rock star, a real rock star. He plays guitar, everyone. And he looks like Jimi Hendrix.
Appealing and exciting artist than the actuality.
Right. I think that's about right. Then fulfilled not long after Fly Away by his next big hit.
Before we get there, though, I just want to shout out how weird the Best Male Rock Vocal Grammy is, especially at this time. He's up against, in 1999, he's up against John Fogerty and John Mellencamp.
What was going on at the Grammys?
I mean, they've just always been very slow.
Always going on at the Grammys. Like the rock category in particular will always pit some young act or young-ish act versus some old timer, and then like half the time the old timer wins and half the time the youngin wins.
This is like the Steely Dan.
Yes, versus Eminem.
Yeah.
But the Five album goes to number 28, and in a year and change it goes 2 times platinum. But yes, then let's make our way to the Austin Powers The Spy Who Shagged Me soundtrack.
Yeah. Wow.
Such a legendary cinematic work/soundtrack.
And
she's rolling around on the tour bus as Lenny covers the Guess Who song American Woman.
American Woman, steal it from me. American Woman, mama, let me be.
You know, kind of weird. The Guess Who were a Canadian band, but Lenny is American, so doesn't exactly have the same effect, but he has a hit with it nonetheless.
He's coming off of Fly Away, and there's goodwill for him at this point, and he's an established radio-friendly unit shifter, to borrow Kurt Cobain's term. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, why not?
And he's got the full force of the Shagadelic machine behind him.
The remake of American Woman is probably my least favorite major Lenny Kravitz single. I just think it's phoned in. He doesn't bring anything all that interesting to it other than slightly modern instrumentation. He kind of neuters it, frankly, because I actually like the Guess Who original. I think it's a pretty badass record.
I agree.
It's just fundamentally uninteresting when Lenny redoes it.
And yet, this is his second consecutive Grammy for male rock vocal. Take that, Tom Waits and Bruce Springsteen in the year 2000.
That's awesome.
Oh, just high to their careers. Tom Waits, finally, 2000.
And you know, at this point, how many hits does Lenny have at this point? Like big hits? 4. So you know, you've got to put out a greatest hits album once you've got about 4. And you know, this is his most popular album, released in 2000. It goes to number 2 on the albums chart, 3 times platinum within the year. And he does that risky thing of recording a new song for your greatest hits, which can really backfire.
But it doesn't for Lenny. It's one of his biggest hits.
Yeah, it's the song Again.
That's from his greatest hits.
Mm-hmm. He rolled the dice, and it, you know, for someone who's got kind of a spotty hit and miss ratio, it worked out in his favor because it goes to number 4 on the Hot 100.
It really did. And I have to say, having done the episode, I don't love Again. I like Again, but I kind of admire Again because it's probably, let's put it this way, the most freestanding Lenny Kravitz hit. It doesn't have a clear antecedent of any kind. It's not ripping off anything or re-emulating anything. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a straight up, you know, rock ballads, mid-tempo ballad. It kind of is its own thing, and I respect that. It's in the episode I say this is kind of the moment where Lenny Kravitz music became its own thing. You can no longer say, oh, he's doing John Lennon there, oh, he's doing Hendrix there, he's doing Prince there. It just kind of is his own thing,
and it's just okay.
It's fine.
It was funny, I was prepping a little bit. I do just a minor amount of prep now. I don't know if the listeners have noticed, but what meaning Joe makes a playlist
you.
And I listen to it.
Yeah, I'm I curate a playlist and Kristen scans it.
But I was, when I saw Again on there, I was like, Again, what song is that? Like, literally, what is this? And then I started to play and I was
such
like,
a generic title.
Exactly. It's a generic title and it's kind of a very generic song for one that is uniquely Lenny. It is still quite generic, which is maybe his, you know, biggest drawback. Also, you know, I'm a Janet Again fan. So that's Again for me, always and that. Forever.
The greatest Again is definitely Janet's. I totally agree with you there.
And well, not according to the Grammys. This is his third consecutive best male rock vocal.
Oh boy.
How on earth did he defeat 2001 era Don Henley and David Bowie and Bob Dylan? I don't know, but he managed to do
those
it.
Those were the other people nominated. It's just like, what year is this? What are we doing? Oh, like, boy. Okay, I guess the youth vote swung it for Lenny. Like,
also, what Lenny is by 2001 is what I would then call VH1 core. He's kind of like the thing that makes older viewers of video music television feel hip. You know, he's yeah. appearing on, you know, the fashion awards. He's, you know, he's, you know, styling himself in creative ways. He's a fashion icon as much as he's a rock icon. So Again, is kind of the perfect catnip to deliver to that audience at that time.
Totally.
Definitely. And, you know, I would say that's it for recognizable songs. I would draw the line there. For closure's sake, I will reveal the song that was the fourth and final of his run of Grammy dominance in the male rock vocal category. It's from 2001's Lenny. It's a song I've never heard before in my life called Dig In.
Once you dig in, you'll find it coming.
Not a bad record. Didn't deserve to win a Grammy. Fine record. You know, a little bit of a mellower version of Are You Gonna Go My Way, I would say.
Yeah, but who did he defeat in 2002? Only the biggest rock stars of the time. John Mellencamp, Bob Dylan, and Eric Clapton.
They're back, baby. What was going on?
To be fair, did he defeat Dylan circa Love and Theft? Because Love and Theft is a legit good Dylan album.
But I think this is Love and Theft. But just to kind of round out the rest of Lenny's career here, he releases a few albums here and there over the years, and they always do well. You know, as well as rock albums can do in the year that they come out. And I will throw a bone to a song from 2004 off his album Baptism called Lady.
I'm crazy for this little lady. I'm freaking for my little baby because she makes me feel good.
Because one, it just...
I completely was looking at and I was like, I'm not going to know this song. And I hit play and I was like, I know this song.
And I will tell you how I know it. It went to number 27 and I remember it from a Gap commercial that aired constantly that starred Sarah Jessica Parker.
Probably where I know it from.
They
as
played
well.
It a
I'm
lot.
Like, how the hell do I know this song?
And baby, if that ain't rock and roll, I don't know what.
Again,
also, he's doing a Prince album cover. The album cover for Baptism is just a Prince album cover. He looks like Prince.
He does. Again, I say VH1 core. This is what Lenny was by the mid-2000s.
He's holding a flying V guitar in a like bathtub full of red liquid. He's got kind of the news anchor hair, but it's like he's not looking directly at you, so you can't see it. It's like straightened. It's giving Prince. It's giving I Want to Be Prince. Good luck to you.
Let's go to the next category. Let's go to albums, classic albums. Do you guys think Lenny Kravitz is on either iteration of the Rolling Stone 500 greatest albums list?
I sure hope not.
I'm going to say a flat no. I just don't think there's any of his albums that are, you know, regarded in that way.
So Lenny Kravitz is not on any of those lists.
Okay. I was like, don't you dare.
I mean, like, we've just went through it. Like, he's lucky to get a hit out of any of those albums. None of them are really ever considered to be on the whole, like, oh, this is a work of art. Like, this is a piece in itself. It's, you know, he's been, I think, as defined by the public, like, here's a guy who comes out with a pretty good single every once in a while.
Yeah.
Which makes him a little bit like somebody like Peter Frampton. Frampton, of course, has that one massive live album. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's not many Frampton albums that are worth a damn studio-wise. And Kravitz is kind of in that category.
Yeah, at the very least, he extends his life. He, instead of just having three big songs on one album, he kind of, you know, sprinkles those throughout the course of a few years.
I also wanted to say, in part of my research, did you see that Lenny Kravitz has a new single out with Peggy Goo?
Excuse me?
Yes. Literally, I was looking it up. I was just like looking at Lenny Kravitz. I don't know how it all came. 2023, Lenny Kravitz and Peggy Goo made a song together.
And she is a South Korean artist.
She's a South Korean DJ. She lives in Berlin. She's like very big with the kids.
Interesting.
Yeah, Peggy Goo.
Because big Lenny deal. Will try everything.
It was like, at first I saw the album cover art and it's them holding hands. It's called like,
You Made I Believe in Love Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, is he dating Peggy Goo? Like, what's happening here? But no, they just made a song together.
Interesting. No, that did not register with me, but God bless him. Let's talk about critical acclaim. So he's got no albums on the Rolling Stone 500. How would you describe this, Chris? I would say uneven at best.
Uneven at best. And frankly, critical acclaim or the lack thereof was a big inspiration for my podcast episode, because both he and Bruno Mars, to differing degrees, have taken their share of shit from critics for emulating their heroes. Actually, the more nuanced argument I make in the episode is that Lenny died so Bruno could live. Lenny got much more shit in the late 80s and 90s.
Gen Xers were still out in public talking about selling out versus Bruno got to come up in a much friendlier environment.
In a poptimistic era where Bruno was almost admired for what he did. Bruno has gotten his share of shit too.
Fully.
And I talk about that in the episode, but it's a different caliber of getting shit than Lenny did. Lenny really got beaten up pretty badly in the early 90s by critics.
And often the criticism is he copies other artists. Like he has no original sound. And the most optimistic take is that he's good at that. He's good at copying other artists. But it felt like it's hard to discount that. Like if someone's arguing he doesn't copy other artists, it's just like, I mean, that's just not true.
I mean, to be fair, other than saying that Let Love Rule sounds like Hey Jude, he's a synthesist, like, again, Bruno Mars. He's taking sounds and then kind of doing his own version of it. When you listen to Are You Gonna Go My Way, you know he's doing Hendrix, but there's no one Hendrix song that sounds like Are You Gonna Go My Way. It's an original thing. And yes, he does that a lot. You know, even the stuff other than the American Woman cover, you can point to things that, oh, this kind of sounds like this plus this plus this, but it's not directly ripping anything off, which is in its way admirable, you might say.
And his musician peers and, like I said, the old guard are much, much nicer to him and more embracing than the critics. We check in with Robert Christgau, self-appointed dean of rock critics. You know, he starts out saying that Lenny Kravitz is not bad on that first album, but by the fifth album, he's saying he has a total absence of original ideas, and then says, Lenny, your work here on earth is done.
Oh, wow.
Which seemed like a sick bet when that fifth album came out, because again, it was kind of a flop and he was following up an album that generated no hits. Everybody kind of thought Lenny was done then. It was easy to stick a fork in him. And little did we know he was going to score like three or four of his biggest hits after that. Go figure.
Now, very recently, Lenny has kind of clapped back at this, saying, you know, he got a lot of negativity thrown at him by all these older white men. And he also always felt like a man without a home. And that he was like never invited to a BET or Source Awards thing. That was kind of in the discourse within the past 6 months or something.
Yeah. And, you know, he has a point. I mean, some of the criticism that Kravitz got back in the day probably would not fly now. And I think that audiences would be less brutal over emulating your heroes because there's so much pastiche in modern pop and rock.
I gotta say, like, he's a man without a home. Your home was VH1, my friend. Yeah. And like, I can sympathize to a point, but it's also like when you're one of the most famous people alive, I am like, well, you know, I think you're nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think you're gonna be okay.
You're gonna be all right. Plus, he looks the way he looks, and, you know.
That's another thing that has been, it's been a bit of a meme, even just in the past week or so, because Lenny's on the cusp of 60, and just showing pictures of him and his perfect sculpted body, and being like, what, Lenny Kravitz is about to turn 60. What's your excuse? Or something to that degree has been floating around. He's getting a lot of attention, but it's because he's the hottest man alive.
And he just got his star on the Walk of Fame.
Yes.
And his daughter, you know, made a speech about him being shirtless all the time as well. That little clip is out there in the mix. You could see the joke coming, but she did deliver it.
She's a pro.
I thought that it was, you can just feel he's like, he's getting in the mix. He's like, all right, now's the time. I'll take that star. Thank you very much. Cause don't you like buy your own star?
You basically pay to have a star. And then you pay to keep it up. Yeah.
How funny.
It's
like Who's Who or something like that. A thing that you actually secretly pay for.
Right. Yeah. All right. Next category is commercial success. The number these are always hard to find, especially from artists before the SoundScan era, but 40 million is what I'm seeing.
Sounds like a plausible number.
Yeah.
That's probably a global number, I imagine.
Yes. And he always managed, like we said, he's always managed to have like one hit on an album to prolong things, you know, just enough so that you can make it to the next album or two and then have a hit. And so it has, and we can talk about longevity, which is the next category. I think that has allowed him to remain relevant because it's not all happening at once, like a Peter Frampton or even like a Carole King. It's like, it's
protracted.
Yeah, it's protracted with just a sprinkling here and there. So that he has been, you know, if we're thinking about like, what is the peak Lenny era? It's like what, 91 to 04?
Yeah, pretty much.
Impressive.
It's the entirety of the 1990s with a fallow period from about 1994 to 97.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no real hits in that period. I will say, if there's one way I slightly disagree with something you said earlier, it's that you may laugh at his greatest hits album in 01, but given the protractedness of his hits, the greatest hits album is actually kind of useful.
Yeah. Are you going to go out there and ask everybody to buy five albums to get your,
that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's get them all on one collection, because God help you if you're trying to find them all in their original form.
Also, some of his deeper cuts that he released as singles, like Believe or Stand By My Woman, are catchy. I mean, these are the kind of deep cuts that are on that greatest hits album, and they're very pleasant. Like, mm-hmm. The dude, you know, records very listenable stuff.
I'm very curious about this next category, influence. And yeah. I'm curious what you have to say, Chris, because I don't know exactly who's influenced by Lenny. He feels like the end of the road in terms of,
yeah, he's where all these influences were leading.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I could make a case that Bruno Mars is his spiritual child.
Uh-huh.
That I seem to be the only one pushing that meme, but I do believe it, and I do think there's a reason why those two are friends and have appeared on each other's stages before.
Yeah.
That kind of modern pastiche was something he was doing before a lot of other people were doing it. The question is, I mean, you're asking the right question. Like, is he the end of something rather than the beginning of anything? And I have a harder time with that. I mean, I do believe that we are now living in a, if not genre free, certainly genre fluid era. And he is a forerunner to that. I'm not sure I would call him a forefather to that. However, it's harder to point to his direct influence and says, oh yes, this person is sounding or emulating Lenny Kravitz. Spiritually, Bruno Mars is, but Bruno Mars doesn't actually sound like Lenny Kravitz. That's the trick.
I tried to search like someone who has cited him as an influence, and it was difficult to find. All I got was Corinne Bailey Rae.
I don't exactly
hear it, but
a trick that I sometimes pull when I'm putting together a Hit Parade episode, and I'm pulling it up right now, is I go to AllMusic, which mm-hmm. is, you know, a wonderful resource, and I go to the related artists tab.
Yes, it's a little hard to sort out, but I'm curious what your trickery is able to pull up.
Okay, but this list is really strange. You scroll down to the followed by category, which is meant to imply these are people who follow in this artist's footsteps. Mm-hmm. And it's everybody from Buck Cherry to Eagle Eye
Your
Cherry.
God. Oh, no the relation. Cherry. Okay. The beginning and end of the cherries.
Kid Rock.
Dana Cherry.
I don't know. Steve Lacy. I actually kind of buy that. Steve Lacy seems like somebody who you could say is following in the footsteps.
That I could Adams. I could hear that. Yes,
I could hear that. Macy Gray, bit of a stretch, but I can half see that.
They probably have the same wardrobe. Took
that exactly, and also the like. I feel like they have the same influences. It's not necessarily that he influenced her, but I feel like they kind of have similar influences.
Yes, I would say that's right. And this seems like a bit of a stretch to me because this is too good an artist, but D'Angelo, which I can sort of see stylistically.
Well, they both notorious shirtless. Chests, exactly. Abs. Very notorious abs.
And by the way, I seem to be the only one pushing the Bruno concept because Bruno is not listed under that all music tab at all. So
that's, I mean, but again,
take it or leave it.
It's what makes that episode interesting, genuinely. All right. Artistry / skill is the next category. And I'll say this, you know, I don't know that he necessarily gets the credit for this, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Lenny plays every instrument on all his albums.
Oh,
he usually does. I mean, yeah, he's kind of a one man band and he's pretty damn talented. I mean, the guy can play.
Yeah.
And that's him doing the playing the guitar, the riff on Are You Gonna Go My Way?
Oh, yeah.
You got to give it up. Got to give it up for that. That's going to be whenever I want to talk trash, I'll just go back and be like, Are You Gonna Go My Way is really good. And that's what I will say.
And that song is all riff. To your point, Kristen, that song, I mean, it's the riff that makes that song. It's a great
song. That is absolutely. And it's like such an iconic and incredibly well-performed and well-written riff, and it rocks.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Plays all the instruments, writes all the songs, you know, I mean, outside of the covers that have happened here and there. But I think he's a fine songwriter.
Yeah, fine songwriter and a strong instrumentalist, let's say it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Final category, maybe the most important category. Does my mom know who he is? And I mean, yeah, I mean, he's been able to maintain relevance beyond just music. He's in movies and stuff. Like he's just he has a fashion line. Like he is just at every event. He is across.
Wasn't he in the movie Precious? Am I imagining
with
that?
Mariah Carey?
With Mariah Carey.
Oh, Mariah Carey.
And by the way, they're both good in that movie.
I will not watch that movie. I'm too sensitive.
He's also in the Hunger Games franchise.
That's right. I forgot about
that. And so he's, yeah, you know, he, that's a gigantic
franchise. That's right. He really is very well cast to be in the Hunger Games as far as like being a fashion icon type of person to be in that.
Who lives in the future.
To be in that world, in the capital.
Yeah.
Very classic.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's just a guy who is famous. He's, when we talk about the Hall of Fame, I'm circling around the fame part for Lenny because that's really
that's the big one.
You cannot act like he's not. All right, verdict time. Should Lenny Kravitz be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Will he get in and will it be this year? Kristen, you always start us off.
Well, I started this episode with a sigh and I will end it with a sigh as well. No, I don't think he's got like a big Hall of Fame career. I find him to be pretty boring as an artist. And I think it's kind of, you know, the industry wants him to be in. So he will get in. Do I think it will be this year? No, I don't. I don't think it's out of the it's not out of the realm of possibility. But I don't think that there's enough space, even on a 7-person ballot, even when they get to vote for 7, that he's gonna like become people's choice this year. But I've been proven wrong and disappointed again and again. And so come at me, Hall, go ahead, destroy me, rough me up. Let's go. Sorry.
All right. Chris, what do you think?
I pretty much agree with Kristen. No, I don't think he, you know, the Hall can happily exist without him being in it. Will he? That's the one I'm wobbliest on. I can see a scenario where, yeah, he does get in, but probably not this year. I think of him among people who peaked in the 90s. I think of him more as a Beck than a Sheryl Crow. Like we were talking about Sheryl Crow a couple years ago and saying, if they ever put her on the ballot, that girl is getting in
Yes.
Lickety split. And sure enough, she did. Whereas Beck has been on the ballot at least once, maybe twice.
Just once.
And I was not surprised he didn't get in. I like Beck. I like Beck a lot better than Lenny Kravitz, honestly.
Same.
But I think his chances are about as good as Beck's.
Mm. You're right. That's a very good comparison.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, just looking at a fun little experiment for all our listeners is try and think of a celebrity that doesn't have their picture taken with Lenny Kravitz, because he is, and I did this just with the fellow nominees, and it was interesting to see that, like, okay, yeah, him and Mariah Carey, him and Q-Tip, him and Mary J. Blige, him and
Cher,
him and Cher coming out of a restaurant. But the one that gave me pause was him and Liam Gallagher, where it was just like, what
on earth? Like, Liam too.
I believe it's Liam.
Makes sense to me. If either Gallagher Liam, brother, right? Wow, look at that. Gallagher brother is going to give Lenny Kravitz the time of day, it's Liam, not Noel. That actually adds up.
Yeah,
it's,
Noel's more grumpy.
Yeah. And so the connections, and this is a similar game you can play with Sheryl Crow. Sheryl Crow has a picture with everybody. And Beck, I'm not so sure. So he is just positioned in such a way within the industry that it will not be a surprise if he gets inducted this year. Now, do I think Lenny Kravitz should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I don't. He's at my personal bottom of this list. I just don't think he has a Hall of Fame career. I think there's a few pretty good singles/hits in there. I don't think that's quite enough. And like the influence category is not super strong. And so I just, maybe down the line, I would be more okay with it. But now, no, I don't think so. But again, I think it could happen. I think, though, this is a competitive ballot. I think a lot of the older guard is going to do well. And that this, like, Mariah, Lenny, Dave, not all three of them are going to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But some combination of them
is going to get in. I think that's an interesting prediction.
Because I don't see the three of them all getting shut out, but I don't see all three of them getting in. Because I think you look at the classic rock trifecta of Frampton, Foreigner, Ozzy. I think that's I would bet on that. Might be a similar thing of not all three get in, but I could see all three getting in. I think Cher is also going to do quite well.
Yes.
I'm feeling good about Kool and the Gang as we have gone through this season. I just think they appeal to a large chunk of the voting base. And then the final few, I think it's going to be, because we have seen these relatively new artists, and I put new in quotes because they're not brand new to the ballot, but we've seen the White Stripes and Beck not make it through when they seem like primed.
No-brainers, right.
Yes, really primed to get in. I think what we're starting to see is that these newer artists are going to struggle more than we might initially think.
Right.
And so I think Lenny, I think about that, but then I still also think about, like, Mick Jagger is going to vote for Lenny Kravitz. Like, there's this whole, maybe that classic rock vote does go to Lenny Kravitz because he's,
you know, when you put it that way too, when you think about the who's voting? It's the people who you just said were the class that, like, the people that propped him up, you know, that were like, oh, yeah, we love this guy.
And to add one more dimension to that, the fact that the argument I've been making this whole episode is that what's interesting about the guy is that he is multi-genre, right? This is the same guy who inducted Lionel Richie a couple of years ago and worked with Mick Jagger. Like, the fact that he has people pulling for him in multiple directions suggests that, yeah, he's got the votes.
God, he's gonna get in over Mariah. I know that. You could actually just put him as the fourth kind of classic rock guy, honestly.
Yes, I think
him
so.
In with Dave and Mariah.
In a weird way, his peer on this ballot is Peter Frampton.
Yes.
In terms of desert and, you know, deservingness and you know, scope of career and the audience, you know, if you that classic stuff. Yeah.
And he's got the rockers, but then, like, I'm looking at his post on Instagram announcing that he's nominated, and I see About Time, Yes, from Janelle Monáe.
Wow.
So, like, that, not
again,
a
he's
rocker.
Just everybody inside loves him. He is so beloved.
Let's Go from Swizz Beatz.
Come on.
Congrats, legend from Ziggy Marley. You know, so
those are three. I realize those are all artists of color, but those are three different genres that you just
right. Yes, it's a swath of a bunch of different type of people. A 100 emoji from Albie Shore.
Oh, Albie Shore, that's my guy. I love him.
I do like Albie Shore.
Man, that's a jam.
Might be my wedding song. We're deciding.
You deserve it. You embody rock and roll and love, and that's from Pete Yorn.
Wow.
So, like, if congrats, Lenny, Diane Warren. Like, I was just wondering, like, yesterday when this was going to happen. Kathy Valentine from the Go-Go's.
This is insanity.
I feel like everyone I've mentioned is from a different corner.
It is also, this is the opposite. I want you to go on to, like, Mariah's announcement. Did she even put it on Instagram?
She probably did, but, I mean, that just gives you a cross-section.
You can just feel it. Oh, boy, it's coming.
Of
if I can make one more analogy, and it brings up somebody I just mentioned a minute ago, one of my favorite voting categories to talk about, and I mentioned it in my recent Grammy episode of Hit Parade, was the Grammy category for the year 1984. It was voted on for the Grammys of 85 for Album of the Year. The five albums, it's probably the greatest five albums that have ever been nominated for Album of the Year, because there's not a bad one in the bunch. The five albums were Purple Rain, Born in the USA, Tina Turner's Private Dancer, Cyndi Lauper's She's So Unusual, and Lionel Richie's Can't Slow Down. Now, when I give you those five choices, guess who won?
I mean, I know.
It's going to be Lionel Richie because...
Yeah. Exactly. Right? And look, yep. I like Can't Slow Down. It's a good album, but is it the best album? No, it's
the weakest. Is it better than Born in the USA?
Is it better than Born in the USA? Is it better than Purple
Rain?
Fucking
Purple Rain?
Rain? No fucking way. But is it the album that a Grammy voter would be likeliest to vote for? Yes, absolutely. Once you know that, the idea that Lenny Kravitz will actually get inducted this year becomes more obvious.
First year nominated.
And I'm looking, I went to Mariah's just as a comparison. Mm-hmm. And on Mariah's inner comments, congratulations, we've come a long way. Honored to share yet another experience with you, Lenny Kravitz.
Ah!
We've got another.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. I feel like I'm living in a soundbite right now. I'm like, you could really just like pull only this part of the conversation. Like, the whole episode is meaningless. All that matters is these Instagram comments.
Seriously.
I am seeing Diane Warren is also in this one.
Oh, she's on Mariah. What'd she say?
She said, go Mariah, and then five rock on emojis and a heart.
All right, Diane. Thank you.
I will say Tyra Banks was on both, seeing here. But as I scroll through, I don't see as many industry people chiming in.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fans, you know. But they would go towards the top. Those are usually the comments that have the most likes, and I think algorithmically would be the ones that I would see. But I mean, is this the way we find our ultimate predictor for induction success? Who knows?
It's a new one for your podcast, right?
Yeah.
I've never heard you troll this for votes before.
Very interesting.
Unbelievable.
All right, but let's go to I would chalk it up to a coin toss for if he gets in. I really think it could happen, but again, with the trend of newer artists, I could see it not happening as well. It's really right on the edge there. It would not be a surprise either way. But let's act as though Lenny Kravitz is getting inducted. Who should give the speech to induct? I have a few names here. I'm curious, Chris. I mean, Bruno Mars has come up quite a bit.
That would be my vote. But since I seem to be the only person pushing that analogy, I doubt that will happen. Lionel would be the obvious pick, since that would be a return of a favor from a couple years ago. Although they don't necessarily do that directly. Correct, one for one, tit for tat.
They haven't recently, but like Robbie Robertson inducted Eric Clapton after Eric Clapton inducted the band.
I think
there's a few, there might be a few other examples of that. They almost did it with Pearl Jam and Neil Young, but Neil Young ended up backing out and Letterman did Pearl Jam. But yeah, there's some of that. We haven't seen it in a while, though.
Yeah. And among the people that Lenny has worked with, I could see Mick Jagger being game if they can convince Mick to do it.
Yeah, I wonder. He just hasn't shown up at a ceremony in a while, and I bet they ask him every time. You know, like, I bet, yeah. But that's true. He's friends with with Mick.
Yeah.
I mean, he's friends with everyone.
And that would be a cosign from, you know, a rock legend, which would, you know, quell some of the peanut gallery of does this guy deserve to be in? You know, I would think the Rock Hall organizers would want to pick somebody who not only inducts this person, but kind of cosigns for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, he did songs with he wrote that Aerosmith song. He's toured with Aerosmith, one of those guys. Sure. He toured
that would
work
too.
With U2. He did a few songs with Jay-Z. Madonna, obviously the connection there from Justify My Love. I don't know how much they would dip into the Walk of Fame ceremony because that just happened. It might seem a little repetitive, but Denzel gave a speech.
Interesting.
Lenny's Walk of Fame, and then
if you can get Denzel to Cleveland, you do it.
You do it. That's a maxim we've been saying for years. Now we know what it means. But you know, his daughter, is very famous. Zoe. She gave a speech at the Walk of Fame.
Good actress, by the way.
Yeah, she's great.
R.I.P. the High Fidelity TV series. I kind of loved that.
Yeah. And she's several layers of Nepo. I got to also, Roxy Roker is part of the Roker family, as in Al Roker. Al Roker was one of the people who commented on Lenny Kravitz's Instagram post. I didn't say that because I was focusing
nice
on
job,
musicians.
Nice job, cuz. Is that nice what he said? Yep.
Yes, it sure
something
did.
Something like that. Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it did. It said cuz. Cuz. You know, if we're thinking like the Hall, who is someone who is an industry darling, who's a guitar player, but also black and wears sunglasses, her.
Oh, they do love her.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And you know,
her,
the Hall,
who was designed in a lab to win awards and not actually release albums. Sorry, I get very salty when people talk about her.
Yeah. I mean, another discussion for another time, but,
yes.
Industry darling is the way I will put it. I'm not going to plant any other ideas in there?
No, I don't think she's a plant. I just think that, yeah, I have opinions about her career, but never mind that.
But yeah, I mean, those are a lot of options that I could see them pulling from, but it feels like it could be anybody. And then you could find the picture of them hanging out and go, oh yeah, I guess they're friends with Lenny Kravitz as well. all right. What three songs do they play at the ceremony? I think it's kind of wrapped up. I think an amazing opener and potentially a great opener to the ceremony. If he is inducted this year, you start the whole damn thing.
If he's the Cheryl Crow, that would make sense.
Yes. Yeah.
You start off with that riff from Are You Gonna Go My Way? You start the fucking show off like that. That is a crowd
pleaser.
And then you do It Ain't Over Till It's Over, and then you probably end on Fly Away.
Mm-hmm.
My one slight disagreement is I wonder if pushing 60, Lenny has the voice for It Ain't Over Till It's Over. That is all falsetto. That's a hard song.
Maybe he gets a duet, though. They bring out a young Bruno Mars. Her. They bring out a her and sure. They... you know, kind of let it go. Because I will also say Lenny is singing all falsetto in the song he does with Peggy Goo.
Okay, so he can still rip it out if he needs to.
And as of February, he's still playing It Ain't Over Till It's Over live.
Oh, all right. I stand corrected. Great. Do it.
And maybe the most out of kind of left field, but it would make sense. You bring out Randy Bachman for...
American Woman.
Set them up for an induction.
Why not?
Could be. Yeah. It would feel like oddly a Hall. It would feel like Joan Jett bringing out Tommy James, which she did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's, I see no, I don't know. I see no other three song set unless you guys.
You could throw in Fly Away. You could throw in Again, but that three song set seems solid to me.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's we have discussed Lenny Kravitz. His Hall potential. If you want to dig deeper into Lenny and the curious connection between him and Bruno Mars, you can check out Hit Parade. Anything else, Chris, you'd like to get out there to the people?
I recently published a book called Old Town Road, titled after the song of the same name by Lil Nas X. It's a sort of a history of the charts through the prism of that song, because not unlike Mariah's All I Want for Christmas Is You, if you're going to tell the story of that song, you have to talk about how the charts work and how genre works and race and genre and all that. So available online to be purchased right now. So I guess I'll just vlog that.
That's a great one. I think our listeners would enjoy that. And our listeners know they can subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/rockhallpod. If you want to hear more ballot conversations like we had with Chris, even more in depth over there on Patreon, check that out. They can follow us at Rock Hall Pod on Instagram and Twitter. rockcallpod@gmail.com is the email. Thank you to Mike Lloyd for the logo, Yusu Kim for the music, and Pantheon Podcasts for hosting us. I'm Joe Quazala.
I'm Kristen Studdard.
Who cares
about the Rock Hall? Cause baby, it ain't over. Now it's over.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.